although Honorable Levita said that we shouldn't be local, but there are issues that will push you ahead and say, now I give up. Honorable Deputy Minister, I think the issue of Bafana Bafana. The Bafana Bafana. Really, every day we are being let down. I think the issue of the coach also is a great concern to us. What is that is happening to us? Are we as South Africans always have to get? Because sometimes I ask myself that all the redundant people supposed to come to South Africa? Are we not that chop? You know when you have ice cream, you know that layer. You know it's frustrating. It's sad, really. How do we make our people to stand behind our club if we are not performing? But I think as time goes on, we'll interact, and I'm going to take the advice from Honorable Divina that we shouldn't give up. We must have hope that within the few months that are left, maybe miracles might happen. Miracles. On that note, everybody is welcome to this meeting. I'm just going to give over to the Deputy Minister to introduce his delegation from the department, and we'll take it from there. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Committee. Thank you. We are very honored to be invited to be here today to speak, Honorable Chair, on something which is of importance to the country. The state of readiness for 2010, I think if I calculated correctly this morning, we are 231 days away from kickoff. And we have put together a delegation to come and talk to the select committee on that appeared on the agenda. I will therefore refrain from falling into the trap of talking about Bafana Bafana and all the things we would like to talk about, because that is something that one can really talk on. Safe to say one thing, Honorable Chair. In the Confederations Cup, in the run-up to the Confederations Cup, let's bear in mind one thing. The whole nation before kick-off in the Confederations Cup was saying, is Bafana Bafana ready? Will they be living up to our expectations? And we can look back at the Confederations Cup and say with pride that, you know, indeed, in that playoff match, which I was privileged to attend in Rumbafokeng, in Rustenburg, they played Spain. And in my traveling there, I had my department give me a printout on the team that comprised Spain. And you look where they come from, Arsenal, Manchester United, you know, Real Madrid. What are the monies paid to those players? You know, I think the cheapest one was 75 million. And I looked at Bafana, and I said, well, I'm going there with a heart that's really pounding, you know. And we came there, and as we know now, history will forever say, it was an extended time, in the second half of extended time, 1.5 minutes before the final whistle, that Spain succeeded in scoring that winning goal 3-2. They fought us with immense pride. They fought us with immense pride. So I'm comfortable, I'm confident that we will have a team that will not let this country down. And what's happening in the meantime, you know, little turf wars here and there, yes, we will give direction where we can, but I don't want us to be too despondent. We are comfortable that Bafana will pull it together for us and will make us proud. Chair, but those who threw a few words, allow me to apologize for Minister Stofile, who asked me to apologize for not being present. The reason is he's in a cabinet meeting this morning, and it's a rather extended cabinet meeting that's taking place with premiers and so on, MEC's finance, and so he cannot be excused from that one. He asked me to apologize, but he does send his greetings to the committee. We have with us our Director General from Sport and Recreation, Bernie Peterson, we all know him. Next to him, we have Mr. Iqbal Mir Sharma, who is the Deputy Director General of Trade Investment in the Department of Trade Industry. Iqbal, did I get your title right this time? Thank you. And next to him, it's Mr. Van der Spey, I think. He's the director there. in the directorate, and then we have somewhere down there Advocate Leslie Sidibe from the local organizing committee. He will be leading the he's a young man sitting right at the end there. There, thank you, Leslie. Advocate Sidibe, who will be from the local organizing committee side, do the presentation. Honorable Chair, with this few, those few words, if you would allow the team to speak to the agenda, and if I slip out once they start coming in, I'm comfortable that they know what they're talking about. It can be accordingly excused with perhaps my DJ. I'd appreciate it ever so much.
It's time for the delegation to give us a presentation.
Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, the DG, honorable members, good morning to you. It is indeed an honor and a privilege to appear before you this morning to present on behalf of the 2010 FIFA World Cup Organizing Committee on the state of readiness for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. Our CEO, Dr. Denis Jordan, unfortunately was not able to travel to Cape Town because he has he had prior commitments. He's currently in the United States. He had to appear before the UN and other stakeholder engagement, and therefore he apologizes profusely for his inability to present before you. I do have a mandate to report to you on the state of readiness. And at the outset, I think it's quite important for us as the organizing committee to say to government, thank you for your support. Thank you for honoring your contractual obligations. Thank you for engaging the organizing committee. And thank you for taking the right stance at the appropriate time, that an understanding is that there are certain constraints in certain respects, particularly when it comes to issues of budget overruns. We've had major challenges, but we are nonetheless comfortable to
say that. And thank you for that. I'll still be friends despite all the hard fights we had.
Absolutely.
And the tough battles.
I was getting to that point. Just that we are not punching on the same weight. No, Chairperson, I think often people lose sight of the fact that without the role of government, this would not be possible. What I'm going to present today, in terms of readiness, without the role of government, this would not have been possible. And so we are very grateful to the support that we've received from all spheres of government, and in particular the host cities that ultimately have the responsibility to make sure that the infrastructure is delivered. And so those are just the opening gambit from the organizing committee. We have successfully hosted as a country and as a continent the FIFA Confederations Cup as a test. But I also want to say that the Confederations Cup cannot be compared to the FIFA World Cup for the reasons that I will deal with in a minute. Just looking at the 15 facts about the World Cup, it's going to take place over a period of a month. Sorry, Chairperson, we printed out this about three slides just on the high level issues. The rest are pictures. Some people call it a movie, but I think it is important. They say a picture tells a story far much better, because I can talk all I want. If the reality of what is happening out there differs from what I say in this room, I think I would be it would be irresponsible on my part, and therefore I brought the pictures and the movies of the reality that is going outside of this room. Now, we talk about the Confederations Cup, which was a tournament that really took place over 2 weeks. The World Cup will take place over a month. We are expecting 32 teams. We had 16 teams during the Confederations Cup. We had 16 matches during the Confederations Cup. For the World Cup, we have 64 matches across 9 host cities in 10 venues, which makes it a different proposition, because during the Confederations Cup, you could literally, if there was a problem in Ellis Park, you could wake up, go to Ellis Park, then drive to Loftus the same day, drive to in the afternoon, drive to Royal Bafokeng, and then connect to Free State to resolve the issues all in one day. For the World Cup, it's a different proposition because you are really talking about 10 venues. And how do you travel from Polokwane to Cape Town and then to back to Mbombela? A bit of a challenge there. So we are saying that what we experienced with the Confederations Cup, there were some very key lessons that we've learned that have helped us improve our state of readiness. But one needs to understand the enormity of the challenge. We are expecting more than 450,000 international visitors. The English are coming, and the fans from Holland. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be an interesting proposition. We have 20 venue-specific training sites, 32 base camps. For the World Cup, the tickets that are available for sale are over 3.1 million out of a total gross capacity of 3.7 million. And if I may just explain that in a minute, the gross capacities do not include, take into account seat kills, whether it's for security reasons, obstructed views, contingencies, and match day reserves. So from the total capacity of 3.7 million, you are then left with an inventory, purchasable inventory of 3.1 million. And I will take you through the various ticket constituent groups because I think from our perspective, it's quite important that we openly and transparently explain to South Africans who gets what tickets and under what circumstances. We are expecting 15,000 media. The hotel requirements or the bed requirements for the tournament is 55,000 rooms. For the prelim draw, we had 200 territories, over 200 territories. For the World Cup, we expect a cumulative television audience of 26 billion people who will be watching this tournament, which is quite significant. We also expect 15,000 volunteers. We will host the opening and closing ceremonies, and that is still on track. And as I go through the presentation, you will see the state of readiness in terms of infrastructure. And then, of course, on the 4th of December, we will be hosting the final draw, which by the 5th of December, people will know which teams are competing against each other during the tournament. If I may, Chairperson, just deal with what I believe is quite key. In terms of the pillars of hosting this World Cup, why did we want to host this World Cup? Because I think sometimes people lose that point. One is that it was around infrastructure development, and not only about the stadiums, but the roads that lead to the infrastructure that leads to the stadiums, and also the ability to be able to host an event successfully. Then we also talk about creation of opportunities. Now, these are economic opportunities that I'm talking about. And with DTI, we are currently dealing with the issue of how do SMMEs then benefit from this World Cup. Another important factor is the country and continent branding. And this is the point that I want to emphasize, that there were those doubting Thomases that said that this country would not. In fact, even for the Confederations Cup, they were shocked that we were able to deliver what we did. And as I said, it was made possible by the cooperation and the support that we received from government. We also want to stimulate terrorism and create a sustainable legacy, and we'll deal with some of the legacy aspects. In terms of the cities, Johannesburg, when I went to Joburg, I wasn't wearing glasses. Now I do, the bright lights of Johannesburg. That is one of the host cities for the World Cup. One of the venues is Ellis Park, and what we have said before about Ellis Park is that this was one of those venues that even before the tournament was ready to host international matches, and we've already witnessed a number of those. A lot of infrastructure development. This was a venue that was used during the Confederations Cup, successfully hosted the opening and closing ceremony. The next host city is Rustenburg. That is an artist impression of Royal Bafokeng Stadium. Now, this is quite significant. This slide is significant for a number of reasons, but one of which is that, as opposed to some of the stadiums that have the roofs that are closed, this particular stadium, you have only the Western Pavilion, which gives the pitch enough opportunity to absorb the sun and for the pitch to grow nicely. So what is happening currently with the pitch in other stadiums is that the pitch is grown off-site to give it that opportunity so that when it's eventually moved to the stadium, it would be ready. So that is, those are the pictures from Royal Bafokeng during the Confederations Cup. We move over to a city with a double barrel name, Tshwane, Pretoria. Loftus, that is the picture of Loftus, that stadium is ready. It has hosted successfully the matches during the Confederations Cup. Then we move over to Mangaung. These cities, Madam Chair, in terms of infrastructure readiness, they are, as we saw during the Confederations Cup, these are complete, they are ready to host. The next venues that I will deal with in a moment are your newly constructed stadiums, and just to talk a bit about their state of readiness. In Cape Town, we have, that's an artist impression, sorry. This was, in terms of tracking the infrastructure development, this was a couple of years ago, this was last year sometime, and this is where we are. In terms of our discussions with the city, the stadium will be ready by the end of this year. There are just very small issues around temporary seating in the eastern and the western pavilion. Now, let me explain why that's not necessarily a great concern for us in terms of readiness. The western pavilion is really where you're going to build the media tribunes. And because you're going to build the media tribunes, we have what we call an overlay construction period, which really begins at the beginning of next year. So there is really no conflict. What we are currently discussing with the city is to make sure that we are properly aligned, particularly with the sale of tickets, to make sure that the Eastern Pavilion is ready. We call them temporary seating because post the tournament in legacy mode, the stadium authorities have said, indicated to us that they do not necessarily need those seats. They are only there purely for purposes of the tournament. That is the stadium inside, and construction is going ahead. Then we move over to Etegwini. That's an artist impression. Construction over a period of time. The winds were blowing on the day. And this is the stadium. Magnificent, beautiful stadium. I think for those who have a television mind, we love what the city has done here, because, and we are not saying the stadiums will not be full. Our target is to make sure that the stadiums are full. But the beauty about this, the city in Durban, is that from a camera perspective, if you're watching on television, you would not be able to tell if the stadium is empty. Because of the seat. Currently, you won't even know. You're not even sure whether are there people sitting there or not. And I think it creates that optical illusion, which works quite well from a television perspective. So the stadium is ready. There's the infrastructure. The seats are in, and I think that's quite key, because you can have a stadium, but if the seats are not in, we're not ready. The pitch is in, and people can see the readiness. Those are the dressing rooms. I know most females would certainly like to visit the dressing rooms during the matches to see the players, but only competition people are allowed into that. But yes, the infrastructure is ready, Madam Chair. This is the venue for the final match, an artist impression of Soccer City. This picture was taken about 3 months ago. To date, the seats are in at Soccer City. Sorry, Madam Chair. This. I have this constant visitor. Sorry, it's frozen for some reason. Okay, carry on. That is Soccer City. In terms of readiness and overall completion, Soccer City is 90% complete. The handover date for the stadium is end of this month. We are, and this is the handover from the construction company to the city, which would then, we're going to then have another handover process from the city to ourselves, to allow us to complete the what we call overlay construction. That is Soccer City. The seats are in and the pitch is in. We move over to Nelspruit. Quite an interesting stadium in Nelspruit, purely because in terms of the design elements. First of all, as a project itself, it's managed by South Africans. The design, everything, South African. And as you can see, because of the area of the country where you have the park, etc., they've adopted this wildlife. So the entire pitch is really held up by those giraffes. I don't know if you can see them. Yes, those are the giraffes. And the stadium itself is over 90% complete. As you can see, the seats are in, and the pitch is in. Most importantly, inside the stadium, this is the area around the dressing rooms and leading into the basement areas of the stadium. We move over to Polokwane. Similarly with Polokwane, Madam Chair, let me not create confusion. This picture was taken last year. Just want to make that clear. At some point, might look at this picture and say, oh my goodness, we have problems there. We don't have problems. The stadium is ready. Also, over 90% completion will be handed over end of this month. So that is Polokwane Peter Mokaba Stadium. The seats are in, and the pitch is in. We've recently had an inspection visit across all the World Cup stadiums, and these pictures were taken during the inspection visit. Inside the stadium, this is the players' warm-up areas. They have an artificial turf, and if you look at the top there is a net that holds in case the ball goes up so that it does not affect the lighting, etc. Magnificent facility and infrastructure, and that's why the dressing rooms in Polokwane. We move over to Port Elizabeth. In Port Elizabeth, this picture was taken quite a while back. This is where we are. No, we've passed this stage. This is where we are. The stadium. This is not an artist's impression. This is a proper picture taken of the stadium. This gentleman was one of the volunteers, 75 years of age, who worked on the World Cup, on the tournament, the Confederations Cup. That is the stadium in Port Elizabeth. It is 100% complete and ready to host matches, and it's a magnificent facility. And those are the dressing rooms. We also want to talk, Chairperson, about those who made it possible, the unsung heroes, who are the workers. And these are the people, the men and women who wake up every morning to make sure that as a country we are ready, whether it's painting the town red or making sure that the tiles are in. Those are the construction workers we want to thank. I now, Chairperson, want to move to deal with other aspects of the delivery of the tournament, in particular focusing on other areas such as transport. And I want to deal with those areas where the government has provided guarantees to track government's performance in respect of those particular guarantees. Now, when it comes to transport, we know that the Gautrain, for example, in Johannesburg, state-of-the-art rapid network with 80-kilometer route, that is also on track. Now, this slide just deals with the infrastructure spend on transport. So we know that government, over a period of 5 years, from 2005, 2006 to 2009, 2010, government has dedicated 13.6 billion for the World Cup. To deal with a number of infrastructure issues, including airports, roads, the Gautrain, commuter rail, and upgrading provincial, national, and municipal roads. And this is part of the legacy that we talk about, that one of the benefits of hosting this event, despite the challenges, is that post the World Cup, we will have an excellent infrastructure, which would be delivered on time, thanks to the World Cup. And I want to say, Chairperson, as much as we didn't start early, kick-off will be on time. Not 1 minute past, kick-off will be on time during the World Cup. And we're quite committed to that. As I said, the picture speaks a thousand words. There's the infrastructure and the inconvenience that people go through every day, but I think it's all for the good. In Gauteng, in Johannesburg,
Chair, thank you. Sorry for interrupting you, but I forgot something, Chairperson, Honourable Chair, and I am indebted to my director in the Department of Sport and Recreation in the 2010 unit, who was hiding behind Mondi Mkalipi, there he is, my director there, and sorry Mondi, Mondi was not on purpose, he was hiding, but I just want to introduce him also, and ask you to excuse me, please.
Before that, we accept your apology, but I'm going to request Mr. Mondi, you've got your right. If people don't, then forget you, must just say, I'm here.
Madam Chair, just please, before the Honourable Deputy Minister leaves, as we are here as National Council of Provinces and as a representative of the Northern Cape, I must just say that we have no stadiums, but our Premier did speak to me about 2 weeks ago, and we are very much worried about that there's no budget, even for the Northern Cape, available. You know, we always suck on the hind tit, as they say. And I think it is my duty as a member of the Northern Cape to please ask the department to look at us as perhaps a training setup for one of the teams, and perhaps also looking into it for perhaps a budget. So before Mr. Deputy Minister leaves, please do look at the Northern Cape. We're also part of South Africa. Thank you, Mr.
I don't want to respond now. Point taken, we'll come back because we are looking at the Northern Cape or so, but I think we must be fair to Advocate City. We must continue. And Leslie, sorry for really interrupting you because I want to be excused.
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I was just dealing with the issues around transport infrastructure for the tournament. Sorry, the laptop is frozen again. Don't know if it's something. Okay. That's the BRT. The infrastructure is in. Just to talk a little bit about the infrastructure and some of the challenges that were experienced during the Confederations Cup, Madam Chair. I think it is going to be important for people to understand that one of the things that happened during the Confederations Cup was that some of the infrastructure, particularly the BRTs, they were not delivered on time. And for the World Cup, in terms of people's abilities, particularly with the park and rides, etc., and the modes of transportation going into the stadiums, that those issues, together with the National Department of Transport, we are addressing them. And I think one of the challenges during the Confederations Cup was just a question of proper communication of information. Because you in Johannesburg, for instance, if you had a match ticket, you could go to Park Station, get on a train, and it would literally drop you right outside the boundary wall of the stadium. So what we're going to do is to make sure that all these transport nodes that go into the stadium, such as your trains, the BRT, the bus rapid transport system, and the park and ride systems, that those are properly and effectively communicated, because we have learned key lessons during the FCC. So in terms of the load, you will have the park and rides, you will have the BRT, and you will have the trains, which will be available in the cities. Once again, on infrastructure development, we know about the airports. Some of the airports are going major refurbishment, increasing the number of luggage carousels, the number of terminals and parking bays, and there's a new airport that's been built in Durban and La Mercy. And so in terms of that particular aspect, we're quite comfortable that we are on track. I now want to deal with information technology. We had some challenges in this area, but I'm pleased to inform the Chair, the Honourable Chair, and the Committee that during the Confederations Cup, the tournament was delivered zero defect, except for one human error which is being addressed. I'm not sure how far the disciplinary process is. It was just one human error where somebody pressed the wrong switch. Now, this is quite important because it speaks to the country's ability to honor its obligations. We issued guarantees on IT&T, and as a country, that included the space segment and satellite backup for the tournament. We delivered that successfully. And we want to say to the Department of Communication, we want to say to government, thank you. because we did not have the disaster that was experienced during the Euro last year. So whether you call us a third world country or a developing country, we developed, we delivered successfully an international tournament and delivered in a manner that ensured that the broadcast was not interrupted. And that speaks volumes. And obviously the challenge for us going into the World Cup to make sure that we retain that level of service. So that's quite key. And this slide just really talks to issues of data ports, etc., mobile telephony, network availability. We're quite comfortable. These are the partners that were working on this project, including South African companies like Telkom and MTN. I think that's quite key, because from a transfer of skills point of view, you now have South African companies, your Semtex, your Telkoms, your MTN, who are working on a major tournament, and obviously the skills will be transferred to make sure that from a legacy point of view, our IT skills as a country, the bar is raised, and that those skills are able to remain in the country. I also want to talk, Chairperson, about accommodation. I indicated earlier that from an infrastructure point of view, we require 55,000 rooms. I'm pleased to inform the committee that, in fact, by now, we have exceeded the number that you see on the screen in terms of the availability of accommodation. Initially, there was a message that was sent, and it was a wrong message that said, we don't have rooms in this country. We do. We do. And those messages that says there will be ships that will be deployed from across the world, which will be on the coastlines, that is not the case. We have hotel accommodation and we have non-hotel accommodation, because the nature of the fans, the soccer fans, they are those people who don't necessarily want to stay in a five-star hotel, and they are quite comfortable to sit, to sleep in a tent, because they also want to experience what it means to be in Africa. And one of the concepts that we are developing, particularly for the African fans, is what we call African villages. Because the problem with African fans, when they travel across the world, is they never have the opportunity to mix. So we want to create a home for African fans. So if you come from Kenya and you want to eat ugali, you know that you will be... there is a place where you can go and taste. There is nothing, Chairperson, like being away from Japan and you arrive in South Africa and you can't eat your sushi. And all you have to do is to eat the burgers, and I won't mention which particular burger. And certainly myself as an African, there's nothing as frustrating as leaving this continent and I'm not able to eat my pap and mukhodu and place when I'm traveling overseas. I miss home, and what we want to do is to make sure that the fans traveling from the continent and across the world, that there will be these villages where they will be able to connect with their home countries through the African cuisines and the dishes from their country. So I'm saying, Chairperson, therefore, that on issues of accommodation, etc., we are on track, and we are working very closely with the Department of Tourism to address the challenges. The obvious challenge, Chairperson, which we don't want as a country, is a situation where people arrive in the country, they end up staying in toilet-sized type of rooms, and they are charged exorbitant fees, 4,000 rands, 5,000 rands, and therefore it's quite important, and government would have an interest, because ultimately the message that will go out is that, what did you expect? It's a World Cup in Africa. And we don't want that. We don't want that. And so that is why we are working very closely with the Tourism Department and the Grading Council to make sure that there are certain standards that are met by this accommodation sectors. Then there's the question of the hospitality packages. As you know, MECH is the appointed hospitality rights holder for the World Cup, and part of what they put together in terms of the hospitality packages includes accommodation, transfer, flights, tours, and events. I also want to talk about ticketing, Madam Chair. Just to say on tickets, one, the price for the ticket is $1 to 7, the exchange rate is 1:7. We have set aside a total number of over 120,000 tickets, which are category 4 tickets, in most instances. And these tickets will be made available to people who would not ordinarily afford to watch a match, a World Cup match. And in particular, we are saying to particularly the construction industry, the construction workers who helped to build the stadiums, it is our way of saying to them, thank you. If it was not for you, if it was not for the fact that you woke up sometimes in cold winter mornings to go and work on the stadium to make sure that as a country we are able to deliver, we want to say to you, here is a ticket for you and your wife or your partner or your family member to go and watch the first match at the stadium that you helped to build. We are also looking at distributing, widening this to deal with what we call nation builders. We're not making promises at this stage. Subject to availability, we want to take care of nation builders. And so, from our perspective, we believe, and we also don't want people to think that it will only be group matches. We are also looking at those key matches, opening, closing matches. We want to make the necessary allocation so that the tickets are spread across, not just the so-called less unattractive matches. But we're quite excited looking at the teams that have qualified for the World Cup that there will be no such things. And in particular, Madam Chair, the best tickets to buy actually for the World Cup are the Bafana Bafana tickets. Because if you buy the Bafana Bafana ticket, the team-specific ticket series, you are guaranteed to watch the final. And I can explain that. It's quite simple. The team that, in the unlikely event, beats Bafana Bafana, you choose a series that where you follow that particular team. There are two types of ticket products, the ticket team series. It is what is called a conditional TST and a fixed TST. With a conditional TST, if the team that you chose is eliminated from the competition, you get a refund. With a fixed TST, you follow the team that beat the team that you elected. So, if you are not confident that Bafana Bafana will reach the final, the team that beat Bafana Bafana will whatever eliminates that particular team, you are able to follow it to the final. So, if you want to watch the final, that's your best chance. In terms of capacities, once again, and we want to play open those are the gross capacities, 3.7 million. And those are the constituent groups. So there are tickets that are allocated for media, for VIPs, for the ticket fund. I spoke about the 120,000 tickets. There are complimentary tickets. There are contingency reserves, and there are purchasable tickets. Now, in terms of the purchasable inventory and why that number keeps going up and down, it is so because sometimes a seat would be designated as a seat kill for whatever reason. Then we speak to security and security say, no, it's fine. The security risk has been removed. We can release this entire row. And therefore, it makes the tickets available. So the inventory keeps going, if you think of it as an accordion, but not in a major sense. Just it keeps on going through various phases. In terms of the tickets themselves, you have four categories. Category 4 is exclusively available to South African residents. Not citizens, not just citizens, but South African residents, because I don't want to come across as being xenophobic. It's quite important that one emphasize that these are tickets that are available to South African residents. And people who stay in a hotel for 2 weeks, that does not qualify, because we track down the level of detail. Those are the ticket prices, Madam Chair, in dollars, and these are the prices in rand. Now, quite important in that slide is the grey portion, the wheelchair seats. It does not matter where in the stadium you are seated. What we find in the stadiums is you have wheelchair positions, whether it's in the Category 1 sector, you will still be charged a Category 4 price. So it doesn't matter where the wheelchair position is in the stadium, you will be charged a Category 4 price. In terms of the sales phases, we started selling the tickets on the 20th of February, and the first sale phase closed on the 31st of March, and we then had a random selection draw on the 15th of April. We are now in sales phase 2, which is a first come, first serve sales phase, which ends on the 16th of November. The third sales phase starts on the 5th of December, the day after the final draw, which will then be followed by the fourth and the fifth sales phase. Now, with the fifth sales phase, this is the last sales phase where people are able to buy tickets up to the last day of the match. Quite important, no tickets will be sold at the stadiums. We want to make that, register that message. When people apply for tickets, what are they required? We require their name, surname, date of birth, nationality, passport, ID, contact details, and the detail of the guest if you want to buy for other people. Chairperson, I want to move on to just briefly deal with the volunteer program. We are looking at 15,000 volunteers from around the world. So far, we've received 67,000, almost 68,000 applications from over 170 countries. We've received a very strong response from outside the country, Nigeria with the highest, and these are not people staying in Hillbrow, Madam Chair. This is people outside of South Africa. And we generally had a very good feedback from the rest of the continent. In terms of safety and security, I'm dealing with areas where there are government guarantees. The government will spend over 1.3 billion on equipment and resources ahead of the 2010 FIFA World Cup, and those are our men and women in uniform, ready to tackle the challenge. And we are in discussions with the department at the moment to develop an MOU in terms of roles and responsibilities based on some of the key learnings from the Confederations Cup. Madam Chair, I also felt that it was important to deal with the question of the disabled fan, because sometimes we make the mistake of assuming that we know better, and we have learned that one of the things that the South African Disability Alliance will tell you is that there is nothing about us without us. And so we've integrated the people from the disability alliances, and they represent a number of organizations ranging from people with suffering from cerebral palsy, people who are visually impaired, etc. And so we've integrated those people, and they are now part of our inspections in terms of infrastructure and across a number of areas. And that would cover transport, accommodation, match attendance, what we call the spectator experience. I spoke about this being an African World Cup earlier on, Madam Chair. One of the projects that we're working on with FIFA is what is called the One Goal Project, and that is really geared towards ensuring that through football, money can be raised for the education of children across the world. And these are one of the key benefits of rallying around an event of this magnitude. Another project that we are working on is what is called Win in Africa with Africa, which is a program where 50 artificial turfs will be installed in the continent's 53 countries. In South Africa, we are looking at 52 football turfs, and we also have what is called the Football for Hope initiative. Okay, Chairperson, I now want to deal with issue around access, the ability of the ordinary person who is not able to go into the stadium. And in fact, this is the most exciting part. Also dealing with issues of public viewing to make sure.
Before that, I'm going to request that we separate the presentation, because your input is very long, and more especially that from our side as members of parliament, I feel that we are a little bit not privileged, because the document that you are having here, it's just a summary, you know, it's just a summary. And maybe if one could have got the one that you're presenting from, you know, would be in a much better position to interact. But I'm going just to propose that let's deal quickly with the first presentation, then after that we'll go to the second presentation, which is the public viewing area, so that we shouldn't forget. Members are noting, so that we can be able to follow your input.
Thank you, Madam.
Honourable members, I'm just going to allow members to interact with the presentation that we just have. I know it was a very long presentation, interesting, but raising many questions while you know, the presenter was doing his presentation. Maybe before I can open for the for members to make their follow-up questions and their interactions, clarity, maybe what the other thing that I would like to check before we can interact is that after the Confederation Cup, when you listen to local radio stations, there were programs where they were assessing, you know, the whole Confederation Cup. Maybe we should check that from the provinces of the hosting area, hosting cities. Did you, as this team, have at least a stage where we interacted with those local radio stations where we interact, because they did have like phoning-in programs where people were raising their frustrations, their experience, and where they needed to see improvements for 2010. And I can confidently say that we've got confidence as government that we are going to hold a very successful 2010. But we think that we still need to do more, you know, but we are confident because from the lesson that we learned from the Confederation Cup, it says that really we are ready and we're going to hold the successful 2010. But I just want to check because they did have phony in programs where the public were raising, you know, issues around the Confederation Cup.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, 2 weeks ago, I landed on Oliver Tambo, and I did an individual oversight. I went to ACOSA, and I asked them to show me around specifically where people come into the country, where they're going to be received, where the reception areas are. I just saw where the Gautrain gets away, etc. And I was a bit worried because from what I experienced was that apparently with the Confederations Cup, everything went honky-dory till at the stage where people needed to get onto transport, getting away from the airport. And apparently there was chaos at that stage. And then I would also like to know about security at the airport itself. As we know, of all the thefts of luggage, etc., at Oliver Tambo, are there specific precautions? I understand there is a gentleman from the United Kingdom working there, but I believe that if we want to be the host country, we must also take a responsibility of seeing to that visitors from overseas, when they get their luggage, that they get all their luggage. And when they get transport from there, that there's no problems getting to where you want to go to. I believe that are some, you know, the first impressions landing in South Africa and getting the people as from away from Oliver Tambo. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Honourable
Chair.
Thanks very much for the presentation. The first question that I want to... Yeah, the first question that I want to pose to the team is... I know that the whole 2010 FIFA program has got different pillars. One of the, you have mentioned some of the pillars of security, you know, marketing and many other areas of communication, but I haven't heard anything on health facilities. I would be interested to know how ready are the health facilities around the country to cater for the people that will be visiting us here in the country. And secondly, is the measures that the FIFA has put in place to ensure that the filling up of stadia is taking place, because the previous experience has shown us a very disturbing trend. And I've noticed that you'll be reporting on public viewing, fan packs, and all those kind of things. I wanted to know the progress there. The other issue is on you referred to the post World Cup infrastructure. How do you intend to ensure that this infrastructure doesn't become a white elephant in future? How are you going to utilize it to make sure that it's well used for our people in the country? And the last question is around the transport program, your BRTs and other modes that you have mentioned. I'm concerned about the Rustenburg area, where of which is identified as one of the areas that will be hosting the FIFA. I'm not sure what has happened around to ensure that there's smooth transportation of people, the movements around that area. So far, I haven't seen much as far as preparations that have been done around transport. Thanks very much, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. I want to start with the escalation of the cost. The lessons that we have learned, it was the World Summit in Houston, where the hotels, their prices were outside the market, even for the South Africans. It was just, you can't get the hotel at the price that it charges. But when the event is there, they just escalate. So, at government side, whether it's trade or whatever level, to say what are the measures that you are thinking to put in place to curb those tendencies, because everybody just got haywire you have host cities. It means the residents of those cities won't get any access, even if they're doing something, they need accommodation because the cost will be high. So it's not only the cost of accommodation, also transport, food, I don't know, in terms of what should be the mechanism that people are not ripped off because there has to be economy boom. The other one is on the small business. I know that there's protocol. I was reading articles last week. There was an article on media, the branding and whatever, and the company that says it has bought some rights, I don't know where, but also there is FIFA standards, and they were talking about they've already spent whatever it is, which is not in line with the specification of FIFA. So the question of everybody just coming up with any branding, I'm not sure in terms of, because I mean, the question of the economic boom. The other one is on signing. I mean, we know when there are matches next to the stadium, you have the small businesses, the women there, selling amagwinya, I mean, we talk of what African food, chicken dafti, bovuvuzela, any paraphernalia, and I'm not sure in terms of the public education, in terms of what are the meters, where do you have to stand, whether people have to register to be there and sell all those things, because they might not be knowing, and find that come the time you then have people marching because they say it does not help the South African residents or African residents. I think another one is the tickets, availability of the tickets, category 4. To say maybe we are lacking advocacy in terms of informing the public,
on that tickets are still available at this affordable price, where to get them, because I know when it started it was a whole question of internet and all those things, and where do you get internet at UCTC? They don't have Remkobo, they don't have that. So they're at the rural areas or in townships where you can't even get those areas where you get tickets. So how do ordinary people get access to the tickets? Another round.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll try to be very brief, and actually because some of the honourable members have covered what I wanted to raise. But I want to zoom to areas which I think in the first presentation I didn't hear the advocate speaking on those areas. No, number one, speaking on the parking areas for people who will be, you know, coming there with cars and taxis. I know for sure we have outlined the mode of transport in Gautrain, BRTs and airports, but I know for sure that will be people who will be using taxis and their own private cars. Is there any parking area arranged for such people? And the other point that I think, I know that we have mentioned so many things about the stadiums, where they're located and all those things. You also indicated that there are 20 training venues, but you did not even unpack whether these venues are widespread throughout, you know, the country, so that even areas where they do not actually have the stadium that is hosting are actually able to have their other teams coming to train and see them there. Can you maybe indicate which areas, which stadiums are set aside for training sessions? And the issue of security is covered. I will not go to that one. But the issue on health, I think I must reiterate what Mema Hasmin has said, that we need to, the report must also give us a specific about the health centers, because your World Cup is not only about transport and going to the stadium and security. It goes beyond it. It also, it means there must be health centers where people are actually checked. Whether these health centers are situated in the, you start from the airport, from people who are coming from abroad, and the airport inside, and where, in every centers, where people would have contact with South African people and people in general. So I'm just worried about the, also this matter that is not raised. Those are the things that I wanted to raise, and thank you very much.
Let me hand over to advocate and the team to respond, then we'll have another second round.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I get into trouble, I've applied to the Law Society to become an advocate. I'm an attorney at the moment. Let somebody talks about misrepresentation. No, Chairperson, thank you for the questions that the honourable members have raised, which are, including yourself, Madam Chair, very, very important and pertinent questions, and thank you for the quality of the questions. One, I think, Chairperson, to just as a broad overview, to deal with some of the questions that have been raised before I zoom into each specific point, is to say that one of the key learnings from the Confederations Cup is that we did not have a dedicated service, whether at the organizing committee level or even at the whole city level, where we look into the whole question of what is called spectator experience. Spectator experience, I mean, when you arrive from whatever destination, you land at the airport, or whether it's by sea or road, where to from there? Upon arrival, what happens next? How do I make it to my hotel? And so what we have done is, one, there's going to be a dedicated resource within the organizing committee, and the cities are encouraged to do the same, to make sure that when fans arrive in the country, it is very clear, number one, that they are arriving in South Africa and not anywhere else in the world. Mm-hmm. And secondly, deal with the questions of transport, particularly public transport. Madam Chair, I can assure you, and once again, let me apologize why this presentation did not reach on time. It was difficult to send it. I think there are firewalls that stopped this presentation from government's website, because I've been trying to send it. There is one that has... We tried different means to make sure this presentation reaches you, but it couldn't, purely because of the number of pictures that are here, as you saw. It's a big volume, but certainly in the future we will make sure that it is physically delivered way in advance, and one must apologize for that. But Chairperson, just to say that insofar as the spectator experience is concerned, we are working on that. And one of the things that we are busy with, Madam Chair, is what we call roles and responsibility matrices, where we zoom into each operational area where we say, the plane lands in Oliver Tambo International Airport. There are two routes, the R21 and the R24. Because also there's the question of constitutional competencies in respect of some of these areas, where there are provincial routes, there are municipal routes. Who's responsible for what? And I also want to deal with the question of the protocol routes, because I think some people are trying to be mischievous here. And I think we need to be very clear about this. We knew we were going to host the World Cup, and we knew what the requirements are to host the World Cup. And we know that without the sponsors, there would be no World Cup. And we cannot, particularly after we've issued certain guarantees, and we even declared the event a protected event, we cannot turn around and say we are being bamboozled and we are being pushed out of the system. And it's also not correct that there was never an engagement with the... When the bylaws process... This bylaws process, Madam Chair, took more than 2 years to complete. 2 years to complete. People were engaged. Now, in a democracy, the majority rules. The mere fact that you have certain segments who are not happy with the outcome should not necessarily derail this country's ability to successfully host the tournament. So I'm saying, Chairperson, that one of the things that we are doing on an operational area by operational area, we have what we call roles and responsibility matrix. I can literally spend the whole day to walk you through each and every matrix to say we are looking at each and every specific... One of the things, Chairperson, we're looking at is waste management. We spent... The last time we spent 7 hours discussing waste management. Cleaning. Who is responsible for cleaning the pavement outside the stadium? Who is responsible for cleaning the toilet on level one of a stadium? We literally look at these things quite... It's just that in a forum like this, it's very difficult to drill into that level of detail. But if I may, dealing with the first question that was raised by the honourable member from the Northern Cape about transportation, security, etc. Part of what we're going to do as part of the spectator experience is to make sure that we deal with those issues, because after the Confederations Cup, we received a number of complaints on radio, and people were talking about their experiences, particularly with park and rides, where people were saying, I wanted to go watch a match. And you know what? The queue outside the park and ride made it impossible. I actually eventually drove home and watched the game on television. And this is somebody with a ticket. Now, that's not fair. So that is why sometimes when you see at the stadium, they say the stadium capacity is 50,000. 48,000 tickets have been sold. The match is sold out. But when you look around, there are empty seats. It means sold out in a sense that tickets have been paid for the match, but people did not reach. And that is why it's important for us, as part of the spectator experience, to make sure that people who bought tickets are able to, and we are working with the host cities. I mean, one of the first challenges was that some of the host cities, as a part of the cost recovery mechanism, were saying that here are the park and rides, we've provided security, etc. How can we recover the cost? We'll charge people, whether it's 10 rents or whatever. Because when you do go to parking, including outside the parliament here, you pay for parking. But the reality of that is that it impacted on the ability on the day. That this, you have to find change, people come with all kinds of denominations, and that delayed the process. Also, Madam Chair, Something that we do very badly as South Africans is that we leave things until the last minute. We know that there's going to be a match that plays at 8 o'clock. No, we leave it until 7:45. And we expect miracles. I think as a country, we also need to accept that there are certain tendencies which we can do without. One of which is to leave things until the last minute.
Let me just interrupt you on that matter. I just want to check, because yes, we accept that there's this weakness from South Africans. But don't we, maybe from the NOC side, you know, also we should do self-introspection, more especially when we talk about the advert and publicity. You are aware that we did it very late, and the NOC was under pressure, you know. So I think we must also do our self-introspection. What is that that we have done bad from the organizing side also? But I was just raising that, that we must try to balance the issue. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think you summed it up by saying the tournament went well. As government, you are confident that we'll deliver a successful tournament, and there's still room for improvement. And I mean, I know the question was raised. We had a meeting last month in Zurich. We spoke about the question of the promotion. And I can tell you now, there are millions of dollars that are going to be pumped into marketing the World Cup, marketing the sale of tickets. And that particular process is currently under, there's a tender that went out. And yes, we are taking the issue seriously, and we are setting aside millions to deal with the issue. And not millions of rand, millions of dollars. Because everybody accepts that we could have done more. We accept that. And because we accept that, we make sure that we go out on tender. It's an open fact that we are out on tender. FIFA is out on tender to look for a service provider to help us with, to deal with this particular matter. On the question of match attendance, obviously that will be taken into as part of our plan of action on match days. How do we fill up the stadiums? Our view is that we want to make sure that our stadiums are full. I think one of the challenges from the Confederations Cup, Madam Chair, and I think between ourselves and FIFA, we accept that in certain categories, the pricing structure was aggressive for the tournament and for the market. We accept that. It's a lesson learned, but it does not affect the prices for the World Cup.
Oh.
There's a question around what happens post the World Cup with the infrastructure, the stadiums. We don't want them to be white elephants. That is why, Honourable Member, one of the things that we've consistently insisted on is the appointment by the stadium authorities of what are called stadium operators. And one of the things that we did in our discussions with the host cities, we've said to the host cities, please give us a plan, an event calendar, up to the World Cup, so we can have a fair sense of what is happening. Now, Madam Chair, in some instances, because I think sometimes people tend to over-exaggerate these things, if you look at a stadium like Loftus, you have lawyers and doctors who are tenants in the building. You have MediPost that supplies medical supplies throughout the rest of the country. So, and I think it is important that a business a plan for a Loftus type is adopted across all the stadiums to make sure that these stadiums become sustainable so people can host functions, etc. So the stadium operators, that is part of their brief, and that is why we've insisted that we need to have stadium operators so we know what these people are doing. Dealing with the question of transport, particularly in Rustenburg, yes, in Rustenburg we experience major problems. And some of the challenges that we experience is what happens when, on the day, the question of roles and responsibilities, some hotshot from some department decides, no, the buses are not going to stack up north to south, they are going to stack up west to east. It creates pandemonium, it creates chaos. It's a lesson well learned. The issues around the park and rides, lesson well learned. And one of the things that we've now insisted on is to say to the cities, please give us your project plans so we can see Let's communicate, because sometimes people have done the work, but they have not effectively communicated. And so, yes, Rustenburg was certainly flagged as there were challenges there, and that challenge has been addressed. The question of the hotel prices increasing, etc., and I tried to deal with this in my presentation earlier on, and it just does not deal with the question of hotel prices only and the food prices, but also the ticket prices. Because the last thing we want is a situation where there are people who promise others that they will be able to get tickets, they arrive in South Africa and they find them, talking about the ticket touts and the unauthorized resale of tickets. I want to be very emphatic and clear about this. When we come to government and we say, we ask you to please introduce some regulation to prohibit the resale of tickets, we are not saying we want you to introduce a law that will criminalize the poor. That is not what we are saying. We are saying there are commercial pirates who are thriving on people's passion for the game, who will inflate the prices to enrich their own pockets. Now we're targeting those commercial pirates. We want to deal with them. Nothing to do with the land of pirates. I'm just saying that type of an operation. So we are targeting those people, and we want to deal with them. And we also, in discussions with the Department of Tourism, we are looking at the question of standardizing. Because you see, one of the challenges you're going to have, whether you're wearing a pink shirt or you're wearing a blue t-shirt, the price is different. Now, there has to be some form of regulation. And this issue, in fact, was raised by the Minister of Sport at the IMC in July, to say we need to deal with the question so that people do not feel exploited post the event. And this is something that we have written to tourism about, and it's being addressed at a government level. I think I've dealt with the issue of the protocol routes. I think we should not confuse ambush marketing with people's attempts to try and because really some of these people are really trying their luck. Our view as the organizing committee and FIFA, and let me speak for the organizing committee, we want to work with South Africans, because post the event we still have to smile at each other. It's important. And the last thing we want is to create to outdo people out of their businesses. That's not what we want. All that we are saying is, if you know, and this is what we talk about, what we call the business as usual type of an approach. If you carry on doing your business as you've always done, and I'll give you an example. There are buildings where people have said, no, we want this and that off. We said, no, chief, you can't. That business has been there for 10 years. We are not going to touch it. We are very clear on that. There are those cases that will never make the headlines where we've said, this place or this building is not in the exclusion zone. And because it's not in the exclusion zone, and because these people have been in business for many years, we are not going to touch it. And so people should not think that it's one-way traffic, where we are just bulldozing people out of their place. It doesn't work that way. There's the question of the public, the pub and place, my favorite subject. Now, we're going to deal with that as part of the presentation on the fan parks. The availability of tickets, I said that we're going to... one of the strategies at the moment is to try and increase the allocation of Category 4 tickets to matches so that we can create more and more access to South Africans and also South Africans towards the match. There's a question of the health sector. There is an MOU between us and the Department of Health. It is correct. It is a concern. And it's something that our colleagues in health, in the organizing committee and the department, Peter Fury in particular, we are engaging on, because indeed we want to make sure that all these particular areas are taken care of. Then there's the question of parking that was raised by the honorable member. I've dealt with the issue about the park and ride. So there will be park and ride facilities, but we also encourage people to use other modes of transport, not just the taxis, the Gauride, for example, as you had in Johannesburg, but that they use the trains and they use the BRT systems to gain access to the matches. Then there's the question of the training venues. Okay, I think we need to draw a distinction between training venues and team base camps. Training venues are venues that are close to the venue where the matches will be played. And so, for example, if you took Johannesburg, you have Orlando Stadium, You have Dobsonville Stadium, which is in the townships, and Orlando Stadium. And you have Rand Stadium and you have Rensburg. So there is a fair spread to support the teams that will be playing at Ellis Park and Soccer City. In Tshwane, you have HMP, you have Pilbage Stadium. You also have the stadium in Mamelodi. Those are the what we call venue-specific training sites. Then you have what are called team base camps. Currently, we have about 52 team base camps on the list, and that will whittle down to 32 teams. And the idea with the team base camps is that they are close to those communities, to communities. And yes, we have engaged with Northern Cape, Honourable Member. We have met with the Premier and the entire executive to say that they have made out a case, and where possible, we will do the introductions to the teams, because ultimately it's the teams that select the base camps. An issue that was raised was the question of how do you spend money to upgrade facilities meant for the rich communities, public funds. And that's a sensitive issue, of course. So we want to make sure that there's a fair spread and that we spend government money responsibly. Madam Chair, I hope I've dealt with most of the issues and do not want to take any more time on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for the presentation. Before I hand over to the members, I just want, on the issue of the volunteers, you indicate that we are looking for 15,000 volunteers, but we already got 67 applications, and most of them are from the neighboring countries. I think it also concerns the concern that we raised with when there was an open application for the volunteers for the Confederation Cup, when we interacted with the NUC by then, that they had the internet, you know, which our concern as a committee by then, it was that only the people who are staying in townships, in urban areas, will be in a position to apply, you know, for as volunteers. What about the rural areas? How do you accommodate them? You know, I just want clarity on that matter. And the other thing is that we once made an appeal to the LEC, let me say maybe from the previous committee where I was serving, the portfolio committee on sports and recreation. How do we take on board schools, you know, these young kids so that they can be part, you know, they feel that South Africa is going to hold this important event. Because we also propose that let the hosting cities have this tours where they will be taking children from rural areas, rural schools, to see the stadiums while they're still in the process of building. I just want to check how far is the urgency on that program. Maybe on the issue of branding, I just want to check public awareness on the matter of oil, because as this parliament was passed 2010 FIFA Special Measures Act, where it clears, you know, the issue of branding, how businesses are going to be affected, the issue of the small businesses that my colleague usually when he refers to talk about Bomam Chize, those who are selling up and plain. Are we really, as LUC, happy that we have, made the public aware of this this special Measures Act for 2010? You know, those are the issues that I just wanted to check on. The other thing is the issue of the African villages. How the communication, because when you go to the villages, when you go to these rural areas, you know, communication is very poor. That's what I must just say. Because I'm from the Northwest, you find the situation, people who are in Blackstock, Rustenburg, that is what we are privileged. But when you go to these rural areas, there's no communication, and it's like we really don't do enough, you know, to bring these people on board, because at the end they must at least benefit from this event. Honourable
Divisas, yourself,
and Honourable
Mr. Yeah, thank you very much. During matches and also after matches, people who are visiting South Africa want to become somebody in the area of the day.
During matches and also after matches, the people who are visiting South Africa do want to go somewhere else, not staying in the stadiums always. The information to those people, did the organizing group also give that information together with the tickets when they are sold, or is there somebody else whose responsibility that is? That's my question. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, you know we had the privilege to have the Bafana Bafana in Kimberley about a month ago, and my gardener, which is also a soccer player, wanted to go and have a look at this, and unfortunately the day before the match I could only get hold of him to try and get him a ticket, and there wasn't a ticket available for my friend that works with me. And you know, I just want us to get this publicly to all the poor people out there as well, you know, that we educate them to say that they need to get this beforehand, and that we do a type of a good marketing campaign for that, that people don't get to the gates on the day, as you say, there won't be tickets available, but that we there's a very good marketing strategy beforehand, that we don't have people that's unhappy standing in front of our stadiums. You know, we see this all the time with our matches, big matches at this stage even, where people get to the gates and there's no tickets available, and then you have to have extra security, etc. But so my point that I'm trying to make is that we do a upfront campaign to let the people know that you have to get the tickets up front. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to add on the question of volunteers. If I'm listening very well, we're using 15,000 volunteers. I just want to check how many South African out of these 15,000 volunteers. And on the issue of ticket. If I'm listening very well, you said there's a ticket that is reserved for VIP. If maybe we can elaborate, if we are talking in terms of VIP, are we saying member of parliament or managers or speakers, so that must know what if we are talking in terms of VIP ticket. Unfortunately, I'm coming from the Free State. When I'm going to home, I'm flying from Cape Town to Bloemfontein. Then I see there's a progress on that airport. But unfortunately, last week I was attending the funeral in Eastern Cape. It's the first time that I go Eastern Cape. So I
fly via East London. If I arrive in East London, I don't know if there's any activity that is going to take place on that airport or via that East London, because the service is very poor. Even the condition of the airport of East London really, really, really is not acceptable. I'm not coming on that province, but because last week I was there, I just made a plea if there's something that is going to happen on 2010, maybe just make any changes on that airport.
This is the last bend.
We are going to go to the next and move to the.
Only one last question. It is on the, I know there has been a memorandum of understanding signed with labor, with the mobilizers and all the things, so that they finish the stadium on time. But I'm not sure whether the memorandum of understanding with the team. As well as they might be demanding more appearance and tell us on the team that you are not paying unless you give them whatever amount. And I don't have been any engagement on the appearance fee. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I may just deal with the first set of questions that came from you, Madam Chair, regarding rural participation in the volunteer program. We, and I know it's becoming a nice fancy expression, but we are actually, in fact, before I came here, I sent an MOU to the Department of Home Affairs. I think we need to draw a distinction, and this is why it's important that we work with government across all levels, including the municipalities. And that is to say, this is the volunteer program for the organizing committee. Host cities have their own volunteer program. Government has its own volunteer recruitment program. And what we want to do is to make sure that across the various volunteer programs, there is consistency. So one of the issues, for example, if the LOC provides uniforms to their volunteers, and you find that volunteers from a particular municipality will be working with volunteers from the LOC, and yet they don't have uniform, that creates a problem. So what we are doing currently is based on, and just also to deal with the question of how many South Africans are on this, they have to go through security checks. And that process is, I cannot tell you at this point how many South Africans will ultimately be part of the 15,000, because some of them may not get the security clearances. And so there is that particular process. And the question of accreditation, Madam Chair, I didn't deal with it, but very, very key and fundamental to this process. One of the key learnings that we had from the Confederations Cup is that we need to start early with our accreditation process. And so that is why most of these people are going through a screening process. And what we have encouraged the cities is to make sure, and part of our engagement with DHA is the recruitment across all sectors of the economy, and not just people from the north, people from the historically advantaged areas. So there is definitely, Madam Chair, a plan to make sure that there's rural participation in the World Cup. And that also will come up when we talk about PVAs, because really what the initiative from DTI is geared to do is really government putting its foot down and say, we are going to go out to the communities, whether it's Kavalazane, Fafun, Lihlakaneng, or Ravokala, we make sure that those communities are also on board. The question of the school participation and mass mobilization, we do have a schools campaign, Madam Chair. I don't have the statistic, but there are a number of schools that were involved that took part in the program. In terms of the ability to go into stadiums, I think it is important, Madam Chair, to recognize the fact that we are really in the construction phase. And so that if once a stadium or something is a construction site, there are certain strict rules and regulations, health and safety regulations, in terms of people's ability to access the site and to make sure that it does not interfere with the construction program. But yes, it is important, it is recognized, it needs to be built into, as we build the memoirs, so as we document the World Cup, we need to make sure that all those things are taken into account. But I just wanted to note that we are talking here about construction site. Speaking of construction site, to deal with the mamas and papas, sometimes it's really a question of communication and people misunderstanding things. For instance, I got a panic call 2 weeks ago to say there is the Soccer City Traders Association. They are doing outside our office because they were told that they are no longer welcome, when in fact, all that was happening was that there is a service provider who is building, who is now working around the precinct to make sure that there's pavement. And all that really had to happen was that people had to be told nicely to say, we need this space because we want to do work. There is this other space that's designated for you. So it really is around consultation and communication. And within an hour, that thing was diffused. It was dealt with, and the comrades are happy.
Are they comrades?
I regard them as comrades. The branding issues that the chairperson spoke about, public awareness, the do's and the don'ts. Madam Chair, we have issued a public information guide. In fact, as far back as 2007, we will continue to issue and educate, because we understand that with education, sometimes you have to repeat your messages so that ultimately the message sinks. We even have pictures that go with it. These are the do's, these are the don'ts. And from our perspective, there are two things we are doing with DTI. One is what we call economic opportunities conferences. Secondly, is the question of stakeholder engagement around, for example, the exclusion zones. What is going to happen to those businesses that are inside the exclusion zone on match day or match day minus one? We want to go into each and every host city to say, and the affected areas to say, these are the guidelines and these are the expectations from our side. So it really is a question of consultation. And the more we engage communities, I think the better it is, so that our message is understood and we are not seen to be bulldozing. And I think it's also about attitude. If we approach people as arrogant, we are going to get an arrogant reaction. And so it's important that we become level-headed and sober and respect those communities and work with them. So that is quite, that's quite important. In terms of the information around public information regarding tickets, yes, I mentioned earlier on that we are talking about a campaign that is now going to start. But one thing that is very clear, and we want to communicate this, is to say no tickets will be sold on match day. And one of the things we say, if you don't have a ticket, don't bother coming to the stadium. And one of the reasons why you're going to make it what's going to become impossible is that there is an area that is called the red zone. So you have an exclusion zone, which could be, say, a kilometer out of the stadium. Then you have what is called the outer perimeter. Now, in the outer perimeter, you don't need, you will not be able to enter the inner perimeter without a ticket. So there are very controlled processes to make sure that you don't have people outside the stadium building without tickets. So that is part of our security plan. And in the outside, in the perimeter that I talk about, the outer perimeter, that's your mag and bag position, where we just do the visual check. But when you get to the inner perimeter, that's the turnstile area. That's when we do the electronic access, the security checks on the ticket itself. So I hope that deals with that. I dealt with the issue of volunteers. The issue around the condition of the airport in London is something that I would have to follow up with my colleagues from transport and to make sure that the country as a whole is ready to deal with the issues. The issue that's happening in Bombela, in fact, I'm going to Bombela this weekend on Friday to make sure that one addresses this issue. But what we have consistently said is this: workers have rights. Workers have rights. World Cup or no World Cup, workers have rights. And they are perfectly entitled to bargain. I'll leave it at that.
Oh, the question of VIPs, yes. Somehow, I okay.
We recognize that government is a partner. And because we recognize that government is a partner, one of the things that we have done as the organizing committee is to develop what we call the South African football family as a ticketing constituent group. And part of the members of that South African football family is government across all levels, national, provincial, and local. But these are tickets that are ring-fenced for purchase. Okay, so there are two types of tickets. There's a complementary allocation and there are purchasable tickets. Mm-hmm. We recognize that you are very busy, you're running a country after all, hey, we don't want to waste your time. So we bring friends the tickets for you. If you are interested, all you have to do is to give us the number of tickets that you want and the matches, etc. And this will go through what is called TIMS, it's Ticket Inventory Management System, the tickets that are ring-fenced for you as members of parliament and other members of that work in the government, because we recognize that, and other ticket constituent group members, including business leaders, political parties, etc. Now, the complementary allocation works as follows. In each stadium and each match, you have what is called a VIP tribune. And that VIP tribune, entrance into that tribune, which is normally in the center of the pitch, FIFA controls 50%, the organizing committee controls 50%. And the issue of who decides or who is invited to those matches is really a political decision that is taken on the ground. We say but one of the things that we've learned from the FCC is we don't want to see those the empty chairs, particularly in the VIP tribune. And so one of the things that we are working on, a protocol department, is to make sure that there is, understand that you are not all of us can fit into the VIP tribune, because most of these tribunes, their capacity is about 600, which means 300 for FIFA and 300 for us as the organizing committee. So there are limits, but I can assure you that a very fair and transparent process, which is managed by the department, communication will go through the members. If you want to buy tickets, there's a separate process. Put your name on the database, your request will be processed, and the allocation is a political decision that is really beyond us as the honor. We will make an allocation. We will invite you to our events like the final draw. But it is ultimately up to your political principles to make decisions in terms of who gets to attend. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I just wanted to, I mean, I'll be doing the presentation on the PVAs from DTI, but if I didn't pick it up now, I would may miss the point. I agree largely with the presentation that Les has made, but there's just a couple of points that I need to pick up on, particularly related to around the opportunities for small business and other opportunities. Now, there is a DTI has published a do's and don'ts guide, which is quite different from the do's and don'ts guide FIFA, which Leslie mentioned. And just for balance sake, I need to mention that. And at this point, I mean, clearly the DTI do's and don'ts guide is prevailing in terms of the context of the law. It's subject to interpretation between FIFA and us. And the idea is that we should eventually have one same document, but that's a work in progress. But, you know, FIFA being a business entity and being opportunistic will put out such a document in advance, as they did some time back before we had negotiated all the issues. So that is a flexible terrain. It's not cast in stone. But the DTI guidelines are the ones that the company should follow, because those are the ones that are kind of protected in law at the moment. Not necessarily the other ones. And issue of escalations, this is a escalation of cost. This is a general trend anywhere in the world, mm-hmm. that during peak holiday seasons, during peak events, hotel prices go up. And that's part of a normal market-based economy practice. But obviously it mustn't be to the point where you gouge out the eyes of the consumers. Now, largely the hotels won't be available because FIFA's partners Match have acquired a lot of those accommodations. So the few that are there, and I remember clearly the experience from World Summit on Sustainable Development, you know, where people were charging 5,000 and 6,000 rands a night. There has been sort of a code that the tourism industry is trying to promote through Tourism SA that you know, we shouldn't kill the tourists, you know, so that they never come back. We must make it affordable so that they do come back. But it's also locally based. But unfortunately, this is a practice that you know, one cannot get away from. But also, I mean, questions are being asked by the same hotels that, what about the prices of the FIFA tickets? Why does it have to be so high? This is the most profitable FIFA World Cup ever, and one game is not being played yet. So it's the most profitable. Does ticketing have to be the main cost center? Could it be more affordable in the local context? So all these questions do come up, but unfortunately, market forces will come into play there. I will cover some of the other issues around business opportunities. And one thing I should mention, we as DTI, we have been engaging directly with some of the sponsors. Because some of the sponsors have a much longer standing relationship with South Africa than FIFA does, for example. FIFA is going to come to the event and leave. But some of the sponsors have been here for, you know, 50 years and longer, and they will stay here longer. And there is also a point of discontent which we will also engage, is around the marketing of the event. We all know the lack of marketing around the FCC, Confederations Cup. In fact, just prior to that, we had the Indian Premier League, which had a much bigger marketing footprint for an event that just came up in a couple of weeks. It took 13 days for us to put it on, but the whole country was canvassed knew that this event was happening. But although globally FIFA is spending a lot of money marketing the World Cup, they're spending a lot outside, not inside. And I think that's a point that we need to make, that we need to market the event in South Africa as well. Although most of the sponsors don't see South Africa as a market, and they pay huge sums of money to be associated with the event, they would rather use that association and market in Europe and America and in Japan and those countries. But I think we have to work much closely with stakeholders, such as the LOC, to do better marketing and promotions around the events here locally. But also, in engaging with these sponsors, at DTI, you know, we are concerned about the economic opportunities, not only new opportunities, but those people that benefit from their normal business is through soccer. For example, the mamas who are selling the vores and the drinks, you know, at the stadiums. That's the culture of South African football. So we accept that maybe they won't be able to sell their food because you have food restrictions and, you know, things. But we are engaging with the sponsors to say, then you give them some products to sell so that their livelihood can continue. So, for example, with Coca-Cola, you say, okay, the mama cannot sell the horse in the pub, but you give her Coke products, you know, drinks and soft drinks and other products that she can sell in the same way, so that people can also get a sense of South African culture of football, you know, because the way we watch the game and the way we enjoy the game is also an experience. It's not a matter of just going and sitting in your seat, you know, it's the whole atmosphere and excitement. So the sponsors have been very good, and we are going to work with LOC as well to make sure that this is properly structured and the communication goes out, because as Leslie indicated, most problems arise because of lack of communication, and so we are much more aligned, and hopefully we'll have better communication going forward. But I'll pick up some of the other issues in my presentation.
Thank you. Let me just take this. I said that it was around the last round, but like I think some of the issues were just maybe overlapped to when you go to the presentation of the public viewing areas. Maybe before, I just want to check the security measures around the issue of ticketing. If maybe I have to be specific, that recently, maybe as a public rep, you know, when we the events, this big event, we after that interact with people just to check, you know, to get the experience from them. Recently there was this activity in Mangaung. The reason why I'm raising the issue of the ticketing, you know, there was this that there were legitimate tickets. And when we take this one, which is not legitimate, when we look and compare the figures, it was almost one thing, you know. I just want to check the security around this matter so that we shouldn't find ourselves where in a situation we'll be having people saying that they've bought tickets in bulk, only to find that these are fake tickets that will also create problem for us at the state here, yeah, you know.
Chairperson, besides law, ticketing is a subject that's very close to my heart, so I can speak with authority on the issue. One of the things that we have done as part of the ticketing policy and plan is to ensure that there is what we call an electronic access control system. For security reasons, I'm not able to disclose the details. However, what I can say is that the ticket will have more than 20 security features. We are working currently with the cities to make sure that there is the term they use is interoperability. In other words, the system, the software, one is to make sure that we have the hardware that supports the software. And in terms of the software, one of the things that we will do is you have a system that says when you put a ticket in a reader, the VOC, and it happens real time. In the VOC, you'd be able to tell gate number 5. There are so many people who went into that gate over this period, and the system works absolutely. I mean, I've seen it. I've gone to major tournaments and I've seen how it works. So we would be able to know, for example, if a ticket was if somebody wanted to use the same ticket twice, the system would automatically reject it, and we can prove at what time, exact time when that ticket was used through which gate. So we have a very comprehensive plan on those issues, and precisely because we are targeting the ticket touts and we are targeting the people who will be counterfeiting tickets during this time. One of the other reasons is that for security reasons, people will not be able to receive their tickets until April next year. And that applies not only to South Africans but to the rest of the world. In fact, it is going to be a lot harder for people who are coming here, because you can only get your tickets when you're in South Africa. So you can leave Argentina, Mexico, wherever, you can only get your ticket when you come to South Africa. And one of the things, though, an improvement from the previous World Cup, from the FCC, when we look at the ticket designs, is that we want to make sure that sometimes some of these matches are played in the evening for people to be able to see the seat, the block, and the row references. So we are redesigning the tickets, very strong security features. Before, Madam Chair, I carry on, I just want to comment on what my learned friend from the Department of Trade and Industry has raised. And him and I are very good friends. And like good friends, we will always, from time to time, have intellectual debates and discussions. No, we understand and support government initiative around the guidelines, because they deal with a lot more detail, and I don't want to take from their presentation. The point that I want to make fundamentally is that this is a FIFA World Cup, and we have we've designated it as a protected event, subject to certain conditions which have to be met, and yes, we are engaging each other in those. There's a court ruling on the same issue around the marks and the, you know, whether you can say 2010 South Africa, etc. There's a judgment of the court. So we talk about the doctrine of separation of powers now between the judiciary and we're working well together. There is that understanding that he works for the South African government, and it is important that he protects the turf of the people of South Africa, and we understand that. And so I just want to say that there's a good communication and working relationship amongst us. And in that spirit, perhaps before I deal with my presentation, maybe they want to deal with their presentation, and then I'll just give the pictures.
Before I hand to DTI, maybe to indicate that as politicians also, we've got the interest of South Africans. That is why we even went to the extent of having this 2010 FIFA Special Measures Act, that South Africans should feel that they are protected. And over to you.
I will make an appearance later on.
Your permission, Chairperson?
Okay.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, thank you very much for this opportunity to come and talk to you about particularly the public viewing areas and what we're doing in there. But I'm also going to just give some background to the context of the role of government and in this, as Leslie has pointed out, this is a FIFA World Cup but how do we fit into this, and what are our obligations? So it may be a FIFA World Cup, but it would never happen without South Africa and South Africans. So just some background, the enabling environment that needed to be created to put on such an event. Then we'll talk about the PVAs and the way forward. So this is really a progress report on this matter, which is currently evolving. Now, in order for us to host the FIFA World Cup, government had to provide a number of guarantees in a number of areas, and they are highlighted here. So pretty much most government departments, from Home Affairs, Finance, Foreign Affairs, Safety and Security, Communications, Transport, a range of them had to give certain guarantees in order for us to qualify for hosting the event. Trade and industry, mainly the guarantees revolved around intellectual property and event rights protection. Now, event rights protection is probably the single most important protection that FIFA needs in order to attract the right sponsors who know that they have exclusivity in benefiting commercially from the event. So for FIFA, the DTI had to guarantee that intellectual property legislation dealing with ambush marketing would be in place, and an array of legislation deals with intellectual property protection. And these are the legislations that do deal with these areas: Trademarks Act, Designs Act, Copyright, Merchandise Marks, Trade Practices, Counterfeit Goods, Special Measures, and even Common Law Principles. So in terms of background, the previous minister of the DTI had issued a notice that designated the 2010 FIFA World Cup as a protected event. The minister has also issued another notice that deals with prohibited marks of FIFA, prohibiting the use of certain words, letters, emblems, devices, and numerals, and this is articulated in the Government Gazette. Conditional prohibition, for example, for a limited period of time, because the protection granted is goes up for 6 months after the event as well. And in doing so, we had to balance the interests of the public and of FIFA. Now, the Minister of DTI has the power to grant an event, a protected event, but that can only be done under certain circumstances. And the main overriding circumstance is that the minister can do that if it is in the public interest of South Africans. You see, it cannot be in the exclusive interest of the event. It has to be in the public interest of South Africans. So in that context, the DTI negotiated with the LOC, and the protected event status was given on the basis that 30% of the procurement spend of LOC, FIFA, and its affiliate partners should be allocated to SMMEs. And government's national procurement policies would apply in terms of BEE procurement. So that was agreed. And on that basis, the right protection was issued. Now, when it comes to public viewing areas, this is motivated on two levels. As government, we have an interest. The first level is to use PVAs as part of the mass mobilization campaign so that as many South Africans can participate in the experience of the World Cup, beyond just looking at it on a TV in your room alone. And the second aspect was commercial opportunities for small and medium enterprises to benefit from these events being hosted. Now, in December 2008, that should read, that's a typo there, the Technical Coordinating Committee, which is chaired by the Deputy Minister of Finance, requested the establishment of a working team to advance coordinated implementation of PVAs, because there are fan parks fan zones that are part of the FIFA program of action. And largely the PVAs are going to be in areas where FIFA and their partners are not doing any direct events. So as a result, everybody wanted a PVA. From far-flung areas to areas right next to each other in metropolitan areas, everybody said, no, I want a PVA in my community, which is clearly not sustainable. So we had to come up with a process. We had to come up with a working group. And the guidance from the Technical Coordinating Committee, which is the committee really made up of all the departments involved in the World Cup. The meeting set out a clear implementation mechanism to build on the provinces and host cities' current preparations. So, while National was still dealing with the issue of PVAs, provinces and host cities were already going down the line. Some of them were making commitments, some of them were making plans already where to locate them. So we said we have to just come and coordinate this in a better way. And we had to also ensure that broadcasting to these events takes place, and the Department of Communications and SABC have been engaging on technical and legal issues since last year to make this happen. But clearly there is a willingness. In January this year, the team, coordinated by Sports and Recreation and DTI, held an interdepartmental meeting with the provinces. And a follow-up discussion was held with the provinces, the host cities, and key departments in April, and ongoing consultations with South African police services, health, and other stakeholders. Now, that's all very important because a PVA, by definition, and I'll speak to that later, is going to be a large gathering, and you need to have the relevant health, security, safety issues all covered. And so the local police have to have the capacity to resource these events, and eventually they will have to sign off on these events. So in the meetings that we've had, it was agreed that the working team, based on inputs from national departments, national government departments, provinces, and host cities, will develop a set of guidelines. So we were tasked now to develop a set of guidelines that would satisfy, amongst others, the following issues. Principally, legislation, executive decisions, site requirements, the coordination of these PVAs, safety and security matters, health and disaster management, broadcast and other ICT facilities. I mean, some of these PVAs will be out in far areas, and you have to take these out, what they call outdoor broadcast vans, you know, and we just don't have enough, you know. SABC just wouldn't have enough to cover all the requirements of it, what everybody wants. And also we have to make sure that the FIFA World Cup affiliates and the commercial partners are not detrimentally affected by these events. So in developing the guidelines, we had to consider current initiatives underway by the host cities and the provinces, which they'd already started on, and sponsors, and balance it also with safety, security, and health requirements, which will limit the number of total PVAs. Now, the objective of the guidelines was to ensure that all the PVAs adhere to the same standard and same requirement. We can't have a different standard for one and for the other. And that the regulations achieve the objectives of the PVA with specific reference to business opportunities and uptake thereof by SMMEs in those local communities. And there's no point in a company from Gauteng providing the services for a PVA in the Northern Cape. Now, how do we define public viewing areas? PVAs, it says you're not owned by FIFA, but in fact FIFA is a partner to make any of this happen, because they are the ones that own the signal, and they have to provide the signal. So they don't manage or participate in the event, but they do own the signal that they will hopefully give us to make it possible. So FIFA is a very important partner in this. And then, of course, there are commercial and non-commercial events. We regard this as a non-commercial event. And so a PVA is also defined as an event that is a public event with at least 1,000 people in attendance. So it's going to be quite big. And they're established and managed by provinces and or municipalities. Our job at National is really to provide the guidelines and offer coordination assistance. But the actual implementation is going to be done right at the ground level. The decision of where it's going to be, on this side of the road, that side of the road, that's all done at the local level and very much at the city level. Now, a decision to determine how do we spread these out. How many PVAs can we have? You know, we decided that we should do one in each district. in terms of the geographic breakdown of demarcations for the municipalities. And there are 46 districts in the country. So we should aim for 46 PBAs. But ultimately, that decision is going to be made by the district management, by the local police authorities, to determine whether they have the relevant number of staff and personnel to be able to service the safety and security requirements. As it stands right now, non-FIFA sponsors will also be able to sell their products and display their brands as long as they do not ambush the FIFA event. No viewers will not pay an entrance fee. Now, that second last point is still a bit contentious. As I said, this is a moving target. The negotiations are going on. But in spirit, the local organizing committee has definitely embraced the concept of the PVAs, and they've been very supportive. And in fact, considering embracing it in the context of their own legacy program relating to taking the event out to communities around the country. But FIFA in Zurich have a different opinion. And what we are saying is that, you know, in a small town, say maybe Hammanskraal or something, if the local butcher contributed to some of the costs and has got his banner up there, in no way should that be seen as a competitive threat to the huge multinational sponsors. It's no reasonable person can think that that small butcher will take market share away from these large commercial companies. But we do need support. We need finances. So it has to be a public-private partnership. And the private side will always want some recognition through branding or promotions. So we are working with FIFA and hopefully with the assistance of LOC engaging with FIFA, we'll be able to reach a very good balance in terms of that area. And we don't foresee it will be too much of an obstacle, but it's still a negotiation that remains to happen. So there are other public viewing areas like fan parks, fan miles, stadia, exclusion zones around the stadiums. Now, these are all owned and kind of under the control of FIFA. This space is exclusively for the sponsors, for the affiliates, and for them to maximize their commercial values and rights in these areas. And there, the FIFA terms and regulations will apply. So in terms of the guidelines, the key elements of the PVA guidelines, it was agreed based on health, safety, and other considerations, it would be ideal if we limited them to one per district. So we have 46 districts, 46 PVAs. The district commissioner will need to approve the PVAs and that these requirements are in place. These are the current requirements for any public event, generally. You know. So with regards to sponsorship, the DTI is investigating potential participation of non-FIFA sponsors. But we're also engaged with FIFA sponsors, you see, and asking them to also join hands, and they are coming to the party in a big way. So we mustn't say that FIFA sponsors don't want to participate. Majority of them are coming to the party in a big way. And PVA organizers should also consult with SABC, where broadcast from the PVA is taking place, particularly where non-FIFA sponsors are present. Because what we don't want then is for the televisions to focus on the non-FIFA brands. If the camera operator is aware, then they will not focus on those brands and rather look out for the brand of the sponsors to give them the mileage. Further, official FIFA World Cup sponsors can also participate in the PVA process. However, exclusion zones with exclusive conditions will not apply. Some of the sponsors are saying that no, they consider even the PVAs to be completely protected, and we have a difference of interpretation. And so we're still going to engage with them and say, no, in our interpretation, when we gave you this protected status and when we did the legislation, it was not for these PVAs. And we will make them understand that. They already have preferential conditions in fan parks, fan miles, stadiums and associated exclusion zones. And in the guidelines for public viewing areas, the liquor control policy sets the framework in which the trading of liquor will be controlled during the World Cup. And this liquor control policy contains the measures that will govern the sales, supply and consumption and distribution of liquor before, during and after the matches. The PBAs will also offer the opportunity for local, small, medium and micro enterprises in the district to participate in the PBAs. In the district, that's the important part. In order to ensure meaningful economic participation by SMMEs, it is important that selection of service providers related to economic opportunities prioritize small and medium enterprises. But again, these decisions are going to be made by the district level, by the management team there who are responsible for organizing the event. And there are many opportunities, and some we just list here, for example, the installation of the huge screens, construction of the stage and exhibition portals, security, parking facilities, food and beverage sales. Now, here's an example. Tswane had identified these services that they can give out to service providers in their PVA. Cleaning and waste management, staff, catering tables, lighting and screen, performances, food and beverage concessions, waitrons, managers, landscaping, a range of activities. Now, in terms of selecting qualifying tenders relevant tender processes are to be followed, particularly with emphasis to broad-based black economic empowerment. That legislative framework should be used for procurement. The participation by SMMEs could also serve to lower the cost to the provinces and municipalities of hosting the PBAs, as concessions can be sold to local businesses that might supply goods and services, food and beverage. So they can offset some of the costs. Because some of the districts really are quite impoverished. And this is really an unbudgeted expense. There's no money at a national level from Treasury that is being earmarked for these events. So provinces are funding it from their own coffers. And public-private partnerships will be necessary in many instances because some of the districts just don't have enough money. So private companies will come to the party. However, in leveraging the PBAs for SMME activities, it should not contravene the trademarks and ambush marketing provisions enshrined for the FIFA affiliates and their partners. The organizing authorities are requested to use the template to report on economic and business opportunity uptake through SMMEs in their respective districts. So that way we can track who benefited from these events, who are the companies that benefited, so that we're able to report back to forums like this and to other stakeholders. Now, the workshop with the 2010 provincial coordinators is being set up to finalize the PBA guidelines. Essentially, the guidelines are done. But there is this issue about how the sponsors, the large multinational sponsors, feel about their rights in respect to these PVAs. And that's the only outstanding issue. Once we can resolve that issue and help them to realize that there is no real commercial threat from a small butcher in a small town somewhere or a small landscaper, impeding on their commercial rights, the sooner we can put this matter to bed and put out the guidelines. We are behind schedule, actually, in terms of issuing the guidelines. So they are done, but there's just one issue that we need to resolve, and hopefully we'll be able to do that with the assistance of LOC. We also need to meet with the provincial coordinators in host cities to take stock of the lessons that we've learned during the Confederations Cup, to align future implementation, because there were some PVAs during the Confederations Cup, and what lessons can we take going forward. Once the guidelines have been finalized, provinces will coordinate with districts, and implementation will be done at district level. The site selection for the FIFA World Cup will have to be made by provinces and host cities in light of the funding and ability to meet PVA guidelines. They have to cut their cloth according to the resources they have. So they have to make the decisions on venues and things accordingly. Currently, the final draft of the guidelines are ready to be taken through to government process, which will be really the technical coordinating committee would have to approve it, and then the interministerial committee on 2010. So going forward, municipalities have contacted the DTI on the issue of non-FIFA sponsors, and as indicated, we're engaged with that directly with FIFA. Budget constraints of municipalities, because of that, they're keen to sign up with sponsors. And if the FIFA sponsors don't want to come to the party, because they may not, for example, see any value in spending any money in a small community with a small population base, then surely they should be able to go to local enterprises who want to support such an event. And so it's really in the interpretation, the DTI interpretation of ambush marketing legislation allows for this to happen, but we'll have to discuss it with FIFA. And as per the meeting on in April, it was requested that alignment be found between the DTI and LOC on this matter, so which we are in the process of doing. Subsequent meeting was held with the CEO of LOC and legal representatives to find a solution, and one proposal was to, you know, give the right of first refusal to the FIFA partners and say, you know, if you want to come, come. If you don't, then, you know, we have to move to others as well. And meeting was held with the sponsors, and I indicated some of them are on board, and some are not too happy. But we see it as a very early stage, and the negotiations will ensue, and we think that we'll be able to find each other. Further, a working meeting with the LOC and FIFA, they're considering the inclusion of non-FIFA sponsors in certain PVAs as long as there's no infringement on the FIFA sponsors' right. So the fact that the door is open to have the discussion is very important in itself, that we can find a solution. And really, this remains the only outstanding issue before the guidelines can be issued and finalized. And the final number of PVAs will be established. That will be communicated by the police services once they make an assessment on what is their capacity, because all of this is going to happen on match day. So on match day, there are demands at the stadia, in the city, in the precincts around all that, and at the PVAs. So police services will have to find a mechanism and a solution to enhance the numbers or somehow to support all these events on match day, because you still need the general policing of our cities anyway. Not everybody can be at the football. Now, this is just something around the discussion that we had with one of the major sponsors, and we were very happy with the discussion we had. We had occasion recently to travel to the United States on another mission with our minister, and we had occasion to meet with Coca-Cola from the head office in the U.S., and they've been in South Africa for a very long time. In fact, South Africa is the eighth largest market in the world for Coca-Cola. So it's a very important market. And they were talking to us about some of their ideas around helping businesses, and particularly around initiatives on women empowerment. And so we engaged with them on the issue of our culture of football, how we get ready to go to watch a football match, and you have the mama selling the food products, and they are now going to be chased away if the current status quo remains. And that's when we proposed to them, well, can't you work with them and empower them with products that they can sell? And they accepted that idea, and we're working very creatively. Now we just have to work with LOC and the organizers to make sure that they're adequate, that there's adequate infrastructure for them. We don't want there to be not enough space for them, and traffic risks and things like that. So all the planning has to be done. But the commitment is there that those that make their livelihood from the usual business of football should not be disadvantaged. And some people who have nothing to do with football just make money on this event and disappear. But the regular beneficiaries of football income lose out. So we must try and make sure that they remain first and foremost in this equation. Now, there's a list of proposed sites for the PVAs. As I said, the final list will be made up by provinces and by district commissioners. There are some in red. These are PVAs that are common to SABC and government. Now, SABC, in terms of their own mandate of taking the event to the people, have proposed PVAs, SABC's own PVAs. The green sites are the sites that hosted PVAs during the football, the FIFA Confederations Cup. And the in black are the sites that are identified, future sites that are identified. So there are far more than 46 here, and they'll obviously be drilled down. So in the Northern Cape, Portsmouthburg and Katu, these are proposed sites. But in Galshewe, there was a PVA during the FIFA Confederations Cup. And that was the SABC PVA. In the Eastern Cape, I'm not going to go through listing all the city names here, town names, but you can see that there were four sites in the Eastern Cape that had PVAs during the Confederations Cup, and a number of proposals for more. In Limpopo, three sites as well. KZN, Gauteng, Western Cape, Mpumalanga, Northwestern Free State. So, Chair and Honourable Members, thank you very much. That's the end of the presentation. But as I said, the venues will be finalised in due course and will be announced by after South African Police Service has signed off on them. And the guidelines will be concluded as soon as we can finish the outstanding negotiating issue with FIFA. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Sema. I'm just going to open this to members to interact with your presentation.
Yes, Madam Chair. I just want to know from the speaker as well, you know, we've got a lot of people out there, and I understand that you've got PVAs, but are they large enough? I can tell you the people would like to watch the soccer. And I really want to know if the venues are big enough. I don't think we actually think of the size of this thing, you know. The Galashiri Stadium, for instance, in Kimberley, if we have a football match, there's a lot of people. But with the World Cup, I can promise you, this thing is big. The question I would just like to raise is it going to be big enough, you know? Specifically, disadvantaged people, for them, this is something that's going to come once in a lifetime. Actually, for all of us, but I think those people would like to go and watch these matches, and I don't know if we'll be able to accommodate it for all these people. And I mean, specifically the previous disadvantaged guys that don't have the money. You know, I would just like to know, will we be able to let all of them have this opportunity with the advantage people that will be able to be at the stadiums? Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson.
I'll continue where my learned friend has ended, to say you still are having guidelines on the PVAs. And there's a whole question of engaging with the non-FIFA sponsors. I'm looking at the province where I come from, where there are lots of squatter camps. And that's housing. And you have Orlando Stadium as a training venue, you have Soccer City, you have Ellis Park, with those purchase of tickets, and the rest will depend on their TVs. And I'm saying, I'm not sure whether it is the prerogative of the municipality or provincial government, because I'm saying Gauteng, it's Pretoria or Tshwane, and I'm not sure whether I go to Lady and other parts of Gauteng, whether it's the question of the municipality deciding that you only need this. And let me just say, whose responsibility to identify PDA and who funds it? Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just have one issue. I want to recommend to the presenter that just like the stadiums, we have seen them, they are nice, the pictures, everything, you can visualize and see how is the stadium and how things, you formulate some action in your mind on how is it going to happen. Would love to see also this fun text or whatever, the whole package of public viewing in a visualized manner so that it becomes more exciting, you know, so that people can understand it much better. And I don't know whether there will be an entrance where people will be buying tickets to go into these public viewing areas or not. If you can explain that. Thanks.
Before I hand over to Mr. Sharma, I just want to check, maybe before that, if you can just, you know, clarify me, that at least I've got an understanding of a fun pack, then there's this 5 miles, you know, that if one can get, you know, the difference, what is the difference between the two. But, like we indicated that our interest is that when we finish or when we are done with this event, South Africans should feel that they've at least benefited from this. I'm looking at the areas where the fun packs, these public viewing areas are to be, actually are where they are identified. But I'm looking on the issue of the distances. But I just want to check from you, what in the case where, for example, myself, I'm staying in a small town, 60 km from Letlamoreng, 60 km from Letlamoreng, and where people there in my area where I'm staying that are unable to go to this public viewing area, and I've got a TV. You know, because in some places you find an area where in that village only two people or two families can have a TV set. Then what are the, actually I just want to check the legal implications, where a situation that I'll be having a TV there and people just come in there, they're coming to watch free, but I'll use that as an opportunity, you know, for me maybe to sell meat and all that, but allowing those people, because they don't have the TV set, just to come and watch, but on the other side, I'll be doing something for myself. What are the legal implications around that?
Thank you, Chair. Let me take the last question first. That would not be allowed, actually, because you cannot have any commercial benefit on the back of this event. Because people would not come to your house if you did not have the football on your TV. If you're watching generations old episodes, will they still come to your home? Probably not. So that would be an infringement on the rights of the event. However, I mean, you are perfectly entitled to watch TV in your home and have some friends over, but you cannot charge them a fee and you cannot make a commercial benefit out of it. Now, the difference is, when you ask about the location of this, FIFA has certain areas that are protected exclusively, which is the stadium and a perimeter around the stadium, an exclusion zone. But anywhere outside of that, you know, one is able to put up a public viewing area. However, the decision of where to locate the public viewing area will be made by the district, by the province as well. And this is where they must consider that, you know, where do you want to put it most? And access to people, you see. There will also have to be issues and considerations of how to bus people to the event, transport. These are all going to be costs borne by the host, by the district and the municipality. So there is no charge for people to attend this event. The minute you charge, then it's a commercial PVA. So this is a non-commercial PVA, so the event is free. But you still need to bus people in, you know. And those are all cost matters that one has to consider. And decisions have to be made, whether you want to put it outside in areas where people have less chance of getting public transport, less chance of going. Because if the exclusion zone around the stadium is, say, 1 kilometer, it doesn't mean that you must put your PVA 1.5 kilometers away, because you're really targeting the same market and you're not making any impact. So you need to take it outside to people who don't, under normal conditions, have a chance, either affordability or access to transport or any other means to get to those venues. So we must spread it out. Geographic spread is going to be quite important. But these are decisions made very much at the local level. I take the point, and perhaps at the next event we can come with some visual of what this could look like, and some of the visuals from the PVAs that were done at the FIFA Confederations Cup, which comes to the issue of size. Now, the definition here is the minimum size is 1,000 people. You can have 10,000 if you want. You can have 20,000. You can have 50,000. But it all depends on the bigger the crowd, the more the safety, security obligations, the health obligations, the fencing, all those kind of things come into play. So it's a cost benefit. At the end of the day, we would love it if 50 million South Africans were able to get a feel. Even if they don't go to a stadium, by being in the fan park or being in this outdoor exposure, but the reality is it won't happen. But one has to make a decision then again at the local level. And this is really, it's a grassroots kind of project, and decisions will be made right there and then by the constituencies on the ground about how much can you accommodate, what is the budget. And that's where the issue of non-FIFA sponsors is very important. Because perhaps with current resources, a district may only be able to host a 2,000-person event. But the desire and the requirement or the need is to have a 7,000-person event. So to wrap up those costs, you need to have other partners who can make it happen. And maybe the local community, local businesses can all throw their hands into the hat and make it happen. So that's the kind of space we need to create with FIFA, and convince them that this is not a threat to your rights and to your ability to market and brand your product. This is not an infringement. And incidentally, there are no precedents or rules in this space. This is an evolving space, even for FIFA. 10, 12 years ago, there was no such thing as fan parks and PVAs. It was really in Germany that FIFA was able to commercially capitalize on the concept of fan parks. See? So it's a new concept, this idea of fan parks. And in South Africa, it's our idea to have these PVAs. So there's no precedence to say this is how it must be. So it's all subject to negotiation. And we've been negotiating with FIFA for years now on this event. And we've really come a long way, and I don't see this being a hurdle. I see us being able to resolve this matter and finally put out the guidelines. There was an issue about the funding. I've indicated that the funding will be funded by provinces and districts, and obviously through private companies. And Madam Chair, the real difference between the PBAs we are talking about today and the fan parks, the fan miles, the stadia and the stadia zones, those are all exclusively for FIFA and the commercial affiliates partners. And to a large extent, they're commercial because people will be branding, they'll be having branding and promotions for their products and services, whereas that will not be the case in the PBAs we are discussing here today. Yeah. I hope I've been able to answer the questions.
Before I give to you, want to say something before, maybe just a follow-up question. You know, I just want to be clear because we need to explain this to the public. We are talking about the SMMEs. I just want to give a practical example. You know, I'm referring to Northwest here. We've got private showground. We've got private showground. And you've got a person in Bloemhof who is an SMME and says to the municipality that because of the financial constraints that you are having as a municipality, can I have a public viewing area in Bloemhof? Because that person will be considering the issue of the distance, that people from Bloemhof will be unable to go to private because of the distance, because of they are unemployed. These are the issues that we want clarity. How do we bring or make people to benefit? Are you saying maybe for this list is final, the public are not going to have the opportunity of making input and proposals, that because of the distance, this is what we can do, you know, just to close the gap, the distance, to give other people an opportunity at least to view. Over to another
point. Yeah. And you said that my question goes around especially to button the people from the small municipalities. I'm from the Western Cape and Central Group of Bobet. Around the Bobet West, there's one district municipality. But there's other municipalities like Lindsberg and also Prince Albert. But in the Prince Albert area, they are smaller towns, such as Klaustrum and Duhamka. Is there a memorandum of understanding between the municipality, that is the big municipality, and the other municipalities and the province to butt in and to provide that service to the people in that smaller town? And also George, there's one identified in George, and around George there's a lot of towns. And some are small and some are big, such as Mossel Bay and the city is very nice and they're also, but they are smaller towns around George. In that same situation, what is the understanding between the disparity and the problem?
Thank you, Chairperson. On the last question that's posed, really that is a negotiation that has to be had at the provincial and local level. What we are saying is just ideas, and we're going to create the guidelines. So if anyone is going to have a public viewing event, they will have to follow these guidelines. That's all we are saying. The decision of where it happens, how it happens, that's a local negotiation. And there is a window of a period now where I think local constituencies can engage with their representatives, with their elected officials, to have these discussions at the very, very localized level. And at the end of the day, it may be that two towns decide to pool their resources and have a huge event in between the two. It's just a matter of resources, it's a matter of the local negotiation, but as national government, as the DTI, we don't have a particular view on how that is done. All we are interested in is that the standards are the same, that the guidelines are met, that they are safe, secure, and healthy events. that's really our job. The provinces and the municipalities have already gone a long way down this road. So it may be useful to engage with areas you're interested in to find out how far discussions have progressed in this area and what plans are on the table already. And similarly, the decision around, you know, moving people and if people want to have PBAs, the decision of whether someone gets a PBA is going to depend ultimately on, are there enough police, safety and security officials to man such an event? Because an event of that size is a public gathering and it needs the permission from the local police office. So ultimately, if there's any lobbying to be done, it might have to be at the local police office level to make sure that they have enough resources allocated to your event. So the areas you're considering, you need to consider what is the resource base of police over there, you know, and can they handle the matter? Or maybe two or three towns group together and share the resources. But those, again, are decisions that will be made at the very localized level.
Thank you, Mr. Sharma. In the absence of clarity, did you want to say something?
No, I was getting myself ready.
This is for your presentation.
No, I do have pictures. Thank you. Sorry. I'll be quick. Yes. It's the last miles. We have identified certain locations which will be used as fan park locations. And the idea behind the fan park project is, as Mr. Sharma correctly pointed out, in fact, the initiative started in Korea, Japan in 2002, was perfected during the 2006 with the World Cup in Germany. And for South Africa, we want to carry on with this tradition. And the idea really is, you want to create an opportunity for people to be able to go and watch the matches. Access into the fan parks will be for free. It's a controlled environment. There's security in place. There's a lot of activity. There's a lot of hype that goes on, including people's ability to sell, particularly African art, etc. And so what we say about fan parks is that long after the whistle has blown, the action will carry on after the match. So people will go to the fan parks. It's an opportunity to mingle, and it really is a celebration, if you like. We've identified a number of fan parks, starting in Cape Town. There is a fan park location. It will be in the Grand Parade area, and there is a fan mile. A fan mile, to answer you, Madam Chair, it really is a stretch of road leading to the stadium from the stadium to the fan park. So it really is a that, and you will see it much more clearly. And that is the location for Cape Town, currently busy with upgrades, including paving. Hospitality will be in there, and media will be housed in the City Hall building. So there are plans, and work is being done, and those are the pictures that confirm the sites for you in Port Elizabeth. And really, just so that members can understand, we say it is really up to the municipalities to decide where they want their fan park to be hosted. And it's really a choice between open and closed. We say the cheaper option is to use existing facilities, because then the infrastructure is already there. We know, for example, in Kimberley, you have very wonderful stadium, rugby stadium. You can use that for your PVAs. For fan parks, well, what we say, for example, in Port Elizabeth, they are going to use St. George's Park, a cricket. It's a combination of standing and sitting. Covered stands will be in place for the wet weather. Potential for second screen exists in the area. Fan camp proposed in the for surrounding fields to house the tourists. So there is work being done. In Devon, that's where you see the Fen Mile. The area that appears in yellow, that is the Fen Mile between the Fenfest and the stadium. And what we say, similarly, is that depending on what you choose, the location that you choose, if you want to drive a Rolls Royce, it's not the same as a guy who drives a Mazda. I mean, I'm picking that as an example. I don't know if anybody drives a Mazda here. Nothing personal. I'm just saying. It really is a choice that people have to make. In Bloemfontein, very, very interesting choice of location in Bloemfontein. It is literally in the township. It will be located in the Mangaung Outdoor Sports Center. So they've really decided to take this to where the people are, 15 minutes from the center of Mangaung. The site will be used for numerous events, has been used for numerous events in the past, and will be located in the heart of Mangaung, most populous township. In Mbombela, the location, we've identified the location, and there's the Bethlehem High School, which is near town. And the venue is the same location used annually for the arts, the Innisbos Arts Festival, which attracts over 100,000 spectators. So there's already, this is an infrastructure that is already there. That is the choice of location for Polokwane. They have already identified the site, and they have a comprehensive plan, and work is ongoing. In Rustenburg, we're going to use Rustenburg Fields College School, and currently there's also talk about using one of the stadiums, but that's something that will be done. But the work has been done, and we're carrying on. In Johannesburg, there are two locations. The one location is off the M1 Innisfree, off Grayston Drive. There's an Innisfree Park for those of you that cannot make it to Alexander. And then there is a fan park in Soweto, Elka Stadium. Once again, work carries on. Then in Tshwane, there's a question mark for security reasons. We are still engaging with the authorities to have a fan park in outside Union buildings. We think that this is a good location because ultimately what you want to do post the event is to use the footage, the pictures that you would have developed, to show the country so that people do not think that South Africa or Africa is one flat surface. But there is infrastructure and it's beautiful, and that we actually do have some of the best infrastructure in the world. So that is the location. We do have a plan B. There's no plan B for the World Cup. That is gone, dead and buried. But we do have a plan B in Tshwane in the event that there is no final approval on that one. In terms of where we are with the overall project, we've identified key work streams in the whole city space. All the whole cities have signed an agreement on the fan park issues. We're just finalizing discussions with the city of Devon. In terms of the marketing affiliates, FIFA and Coca-Cola is on board, and other commercial affiliates, there are discussions with them, and the idea is to finish those contracts end of October. In the media space, I don't have a conflict on this one, but yes, the SABC has come on board as the official broadcaster for the fan park. And as you may or may not be aware, Madam Chair, the fan park project will be launched between the 2nd and the 3rd and the 4th of October during the final draw in Cape Town on Long Street. All the host cities are welcome to display in that space. That would really be the time when we begin to create excitement about the fact that the World Cup is amongst us. In terms of the infrastructure, I think it's quite important. Who is paying for what in the fan park space? FIFA is paying for the screens, the stage, the sound, and the costs that are associated with that. So we're talking here about, and that one of the questions that one of the members has raised deals with the question of procurement, because you don't want to leave these things late. There are only so many number of screens around the country or around the world, and so the sooner you are able to procure these, the better. And yes, we have encouraged FIFA and the host cities to make sure that they procure in and make sure that they have people in the areas, local communities, who can operate and learn from these things, and so the work is going ahead. In terms of the project management itself, we have what we call an event manual, which details, gives you a blow-by-blow account. When you have the event manual, you can literally run a center. It shows you, it literally gives you all the specification. When you talk about a cable from one end of the stadium to another of the site, you know how much cabling you need. I think most importantly, and this is the discussion that Mr. Sharma and I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee, as South Africans, we are engaging FIFA to say we want economic opportunities for our people in the Sand Park space. And the mamas and the papas, the mamkises, etc., and the makumalos, am I allowed to say that? They are allowed. They will be given a space and an opportunity in the Sand Park in the Sand Park space. Obviously, there are issues around health. We want to make sure that people go through a proper registration system for them to be able to operate. So we're quite confident in terms of the number of issues, including the Sand Park issue, where we believe that this is where the fun will happen. The project is on track. Mm-hmm. The sites have been identified. Cities at the moment went out on tender. They are appointing the event management and the production companies that are going to work. Many great opportunities also from a revenue perspective, the food and beverage, all those opportunities, arts and crafts, people will have the opportunity to display, and their income from that will go to the host cities and not to the organizing committee and FIFA. And I want to make the point that the ticket price will not change because the funding of the organizing committee is from the ticketing, from the ticket revenue. So it's quite critical. And I'm not talking bonuses and everything. I'm just talking for us to be able to operate the overlay infrastructure that we have to pay for in the stadium, which runs into billions. It is generated from that particular income. I thank you, Madam Chair, and I thank the members of the committee.
Thank you, Leslie. Let me just take this opportunity maybe to thank the DG and your delegation to come and give this briefing. I think all members now, we are more informed, but if there are issues that will need more clarity, I think we'll still have to call you, because as the event is nearing, we'll need more information, because people will need more, you know, to understand what is happening. But like I indicated, I said earlier on that we are very confident as this government and South Africans that we are really going to host a very successful event, and we can feel it. That will make it, I thank you. And meeting sent to adjourn. Thank you.
Sorry, sir. Sir Didi, can I ask you to make me a copy, please, of your presentation?
I need to do an inscription first.
Oh, okay. So I don't have a paper copy. Okay, can I give you my card then?
Yeah, were you smiling all the time?
Now I'm missing it. I'm tired myself. So who do you work for? I see you snapped away.
I'm working for the Cape Town.
Oh, okay, let me see your equipment. Oh, I've got an old DI-100 myself.
Yeah, I love this camera.
Which one do you have? Same thing, I've got the same thing. Yeah, I know, it's great. It only lacks a bit of sharpness. I don't know if you noticed that.
Yeah.
It lacks a bit of sharpness.
The lens which will be more problem.
Let me see which one you got.
It's
24-50mm. Okay. Now I've got the standard 18-55mm lens on mine. And I've got the battery pack as well.
Yeah.
The extra part. Yeah. You put the double battery in, you can double the time.
I think
No, it's a nice piece of machinery. Good reviews on it. Oh, you got a nice low pro backpack. Hey, which is this one? Oh, this is a pro one, eh? Hey, this is a. Hey, check it out. Yes, no, this is a real Baba. No, this is a. This is a top piece of machinery. Yeah, D1H. Yeah, it came out in about 2001, there around here. Yeah, but it's a top camera. The new one, the D3, eh? D3 now, the professional. Yeah, it's big money. Big bucks, eh? Yeah. Yeah, no, these things are expensive. I also bought my D100. That's the best. You have to look at the second-hand market, you know. It's a clean one and a high condition one. So you say your photos are going to be published? Is it? Oh, okay. Okay. Let me just get my stuff.
Long, eh?
too long.
Yeah, I know.
Tired now.
It was boring me. All what I wanted to hear at the radio, no.
Oh, okay.
That's the key thing. I read that as well.
Yeah, well, they say
it. I'm going to be sorry that you're going to write. If you don't say that, you read that show.
Yeah, that's the bottom line.
Bottom line, yes.
The bottom line.
Hi everybody. Hi. All right.